want to talk about the role of the contractor within the insurance restoration industry. And I want to point out a couple of key and crucial factors that you need to consider that can help to protect you from exposure and liability. So one of the first things that we need to talk about is laws in many states, which we can cover, you know, all the specific laws, but again, I'm not a lawyer, so that's not what I'm here for, is to advise you on laws in different states. But I think generally speaking, the thing that's kept me away from this whole area completely 100% is that you cannot act as an adjuster. You cannot act as a public adjuster. So there are various laws, like one of them is unauthorized acting as a public adjuster. So, I mean, there are various laws that are pretty much centered around that general principle. But what it really means, you know, like if you dig deeper into that, well, what does it mean to act as an adjuster? Right? What does it mean to act as a public adjuster? What does it mean? Where do you cross that line? Is it, you know, when you go out and meet with the adjuster? Is it, you know, when you talk about price? Is it when you talk about the estimate? Are you allowed to send the estimate to them? Are you allowed to call them? Are you allowed to talk to them about the building codes? Are you allowed to talk to them about the scope of work, about price, all those different things? And so, but not, you know, a lot of those things really don't factor into it at all. The thing that you cannot do is you cannot talk about two things. And those are policy, anything related to the policy, or coverage. Like, are they going to apply coverage based on the policy? So you can't talk about policy and coverage. If you stay away from those things, then you're okay. And I'm going to elaborate on that, and so that you can further sort of outline your boundaries, if you will, so that you know the lines to stay within. And I'm not going to get overly technical. I'm not going to get into all the various laws that apply and all of that, but I am going to cover some basic and key principles that I think that you'll find will help you stay away from trouble and will help you navigate the complicated waters. So now, the first thing I want to bring to your attention along those lines is that there are huge efforts underway to cut the contractor off at his knees or her knees. There are huge efforts underway by insurance companies, but also from various associations like PA associations. Like, there are people that I know of, the friends of mine, who have been to various PA meetings, you know, association meetings and group events, and there are lobbying efforts being made by those organizations to change various laws to make it even more restrictive for the contractor. Okay, so you need to be really aware of what's going on. And I think that ultimately, some of the things that the contractors are doing are making it more complicated by forcing the insurance companies to make more lobbying efforts to get some of these rules passed that will keep you out of certain areas. And so let me explain what I mean. So let me just talk about if the insurance companies, if they're continuously getting contractors that are meeting out there and they're dancing around policy and coverage issues and case law and those kinds of things, then they move to become more restrictive so that they pay out less money. I mean, it just makes common sense. So now let's talk about, generally speaking, some of the things that are not allowed. So now, as I said, you cannot talk about policy and coverage, but however, there are two things that come awfully close to policy and coverage issues that do intermix with the contractor's role that is crucial that you have to know. There's information that you have to know. And aside from these two things, I would stay completely away from it. But those two things, and it's really crucial, this is good advice that you need to have on every job that you ever take on. If you don't know these two things, you're just crazy, especially now that after I've told you about it. But the first is, does the policy have OL coverage, ordinance and law coverage. So it's your building code upgrade coverage. So quick example, anything 2012 ICC codes, what we're going to get into in the next segment, and beyond, and more recent, requires that a roof, whether it had it before or not, requires that it has drip edge. That would be considered a code upgrade. So you need to know, I mean, because the law then, that means that the law requires that you put drip edge on, whether it had drip edge or not. It must be done. That's law. Whether you're out there following the law or not, you need to know. That's the law, okay? So the law requires that you now put drip edge on the roof, even though it didn't have drip edge before. So you now need to know, does the policy cover that? Meaning, is the insurance carrier going to pay for that, or is the property owner going to pay for that? One or the other, I mean, because they have to pay for it, right? You're providing the service because you're required to do so by law. Somebody has to pay for it. So you must know if the policy allows for that. Now, I just gave you a real basic and simple example, but what about when we're doing a commercial flat roof that's, you know, 200-300 squares big, and it doesn't have ISO board on it, and we're exposing the deck, and it now needs ISO board according to the IECC codes and the R values that need to be up to par, and they're not. And so now the law requires, it doesn't suggest, it requires that we now put ISO board. So in 300 squares, we're way above that, right? About above that number we were at with the drip edge. Now that's a big deal. So do they have the coverage? We don't want to get ourselves into a nightmare to where we find out that it's required that we follow the law and we've got to invest a couple $100,000 on a code upgrade item that's not even allowable or covered by the policy. Meaning the property owner should know up front that they're on the hook for that. Right? Don't surprise them with that, because then it's going to end up in a litigation nightmare where they're like, oh, I'm not paying for it. And you're like, well, you have to pay for it because the contract says and all that. And you want to stay away from that. The best way to stay away from that is find out about it up front. Next thing is, okay, so you found out that they have code upgrade coverage, the OL coverage. Now, is there a cap on that coverage? So a lot of policies have like a 10% cap, 10% of whatever the property's worth or the insurable value of the property, up to 10% of that amount. So if the property is insured for $500,000, if that's the policy limit, then they'll cover up to $50,000. And again, I'm not a policy or coverage expert, so I'm not going to dive into that and explain to you about all what that means. I'm just giving you the basics of the top line stuff we need to know. Okay? So if it's 5% of the cap, then probably that ISO board scenario I just gave you is way over that, right? Over the 50,000. That would cause problems. You need to know that. How do you find that out without getting into trouble with the policy and coverage? One of the ways I would do it is every time that you sign up a client, when you officially sign them, you know, you probably have a number of documents that you're having them sign, probably a contract or maybe a couple different contract documents, maybe a letter of authorization for their mortgage company, and maybe some other documents or forms or emergency services authorization for any mitigation or temporary repair or tarping, that kind of thing. So I would just add in, you know, a whole nother step to that part of the process, and you're welcoming, you know, you're welcoming the client, you send them out an email, welcome, thank you for signing and having the confidence to sign with. But whatever your process is at that welcome step, I would put in another part of the process, which includes them sending an email to their insurance agent that just basically says, we have chosen a contractor to make the repairs for hail damage that we suffered or the hurricane damage that we suffered. And they're gonna come out and they're gonna do the work. But the thing that I need from you, Mr. and Mrs. Agent, is does my policy have coverage for ordinance and laws, in parentheses, building code upgrade? And question, second question, and if so, are there any specific exclusions to that or limitations? So are there any caps that I need to be aware of? Okay, I need to know about these things. And then secondly, an issue I haven't yet mentioned, but I want you to put this in with the agent email from the property owner, not from you, but from the property owner also, is the policy an actual cash value policy, ACV, or is the policy a replacement cost value policy, RCV? Okay, so just to cover these real quick, Let me stop right here. For those of you who don't have an understanding, and I apologize if you already do, but I understand, you know, this is a pretty basic element, but don't feel bad if you don't know about this, but you need to know. So it's my responsibility to cover it. What is ACV and RCV, okay? RCV is replacement cost value. ACV is actual cash value. Let me give you a bit, and this is not only so much for maybe you to learn it, because maybe you already know it, for those of you who already know it, let's listen to this so we can learn a better way of explaining it to your prospects and to your clients. So let me give you an example. You have an example that you can use to break down for your prospects and clients. You have an ACV policy can best be compared to an auto policy. Okay, most auto policies are ACV policies. So if you total out your car, your truck tomorrow, and it's totaled, like it's a total loss, and the insurance company determines that, then what they do is they come up with the value of that vehicle at the time of the loss, of the accident. So they'll deduct it and depreciate it. They take off depreciation from the auto, from the car, for things such as the mileage that was on it at the time of the loss, for the age of the car. So kind of the blue book value, if you will, but the depreciated value, the amount that you would go to try to sell it for before actually the accident happened. That's ACV. So if you get a total loss, then the insurance company would write you a check based on that amount, not a check based on the amount that it would cost you to go buy a brand new car at today's rate. So like if it was a 2008 Toyota Corolla that you totaled, okay, then they're not going to give you a check to go buy a 2018 Corolla brand new, okay? That would be a replacement cost value policy. That would be different. And as much as I'm not a policy coverage expert, I'm even more not a policy coverage expert when it comes to auto stuff, okay? But that's been a scenario and an example that I've been able to use to sort of illustrate for a prospect so they could better understand how this stuff all works. So that's your, now I'm gonna show you how that comes into play with a property damage claim. But that's your actual cash value. The insurance company's gonna cut you a check based on what it was worth after the depreciated amount at the time of the accident, okay? Now, whereas RCV comes in, replacement cost value, let's look at it in the case of a new roof. Your roof was damaged, the insurance adjuster comes out, and they do depreciate it. They do calculate the depreciation. So they do say, how many years old is this roof? They try to determine that, and they take off for the age of the roof, okay? And they depreciate that. And so then what they do is they cut a check based on the actual cash value, just like they do in the car scenario. The upfront check is the actual cash value after depreciation. They give you that, but the depreciation is withheld and it's still available to you if the work is actually performed. So in other words, they do pay replacement cost value, which is the amount that the roof would cost today for a brand new roof, not a depreciated and used roof, right? But what it costs for a brand new roof. So they will pay you that full amount, the RCV, the replacement cost value, but how it's paid to you is on the upfront check is the ACV check, the actual cash value check, whereas they will give you the total amount, a figure of the RCV, but they will subtract the depreciation, they'll subtract the deductible, and they'll arrive at the ACV amount. You go do the work is then considered incurred. It's paid when incurred, invoice from the contractor, and they release the depreciation, so now they've paid up to the RCV amount, the replacement cost value amount. Okay, so now you can see where you need to know that information. I'll never forget this, like a bed and breakfast type place. It was a commercial job. I was very, very young, and up to that point, it was the biggest job I ever landed. Oh, wonder why it was so easy to land, but it was a historical building and it had all kinds of damage, and the insurance, I met with the adjuster and the second adjuster, and they sent out engineers years and years ago. And they had no problem, you know, agreeing that it was all damage that they had to pay for and all of that. But little did I know, after I replaced the roof, because I didn't know the proper steps and, you know, when to build and when, you know, get the approval and when to submit the estimate. And so I had already paid for this big, gigantic historical roof and all the decking and all of that, only to find out that they did not have OL coverage and it was an ACV policy. That was the last time I ever made that mistake. You know, because once you learn from something significant like that, it hurts. It hurts. And so, as I mentioned before, I've made a lot of mistakes through the years. That is one of them. And this, again, is an example of where you can learn from my mistakes. And those mistakes are never take on a job where you don't know. Now, if you're going to take it and they don't have OL coverage, or if it's an ACV policy, that's one thing. I'm not saying you shouldn't take those jobs, but you should know about it so that you could maybe do some creative financing through some other items on the job and maneuver some things around and make sure that you're getting paid properly for it. And so I'm not saying that you have to run to the client and make them pay for everything. There could be a creative way where you can get it maneuvered, which we'll cover later, but you need to know that up front so that you can learn to strategize and you know, work this particular job the right way so that you can stay ahead at all times and that your client can stay ahead. You always want to protect your client and serve them in the absolute best way possible. I'm definitely an advocate of serving the client in the most ethical way that you possibly can, and that you always over deliver in the value that you provide. And I've learned that, you know, the hard way and the good way through the years, right? Is that you must just give in the value till it hurts, right? Like, you must serve your client and protect them by knowing some of these things. I'm not saying protect them in the sense of an attorney, but I'm saying if you know some of these things and you do your due diligence, it just adds to your competence level, and then you could kind of keep your client out of some of the pitfalls. You know, as a young man, I didn't know hardly any of these things. I learned by doing. And so it's just like amazing to think that if I didn't know about the building codes and if I wasn't doing it properly, then think about that. I'm actually putting my client, the owner of the property, at risk, and I'm exposing them to liability and unnecessary exposure. So it's not just exposing yourself and your company and your insurance, but it's your client, it's the public. And so if in case you don't know me personally, my principles and my philosophies are to be a good advocate of the client. Never do anything at their expense, right? And so I think you need to know that. And if you can properly educate your client, that's another aspect of it, that you're constantly educating your client. Whenever you're doing the inspection, which we're going to cover, throughout the process, you're educating your client. You're asking them lots of questions. You're investigating all the details, but you're educating their client. Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, typically, you know, in the case of this chimney here, you know, the building codes come into play, right? I mean, flashing must be replaced where rusted, damaged, or deteriorated. And see that nail right there, Mr. Jones? That constitutes damage, you know, so that flashing is damaged, not by hail or not by the hurricane or anything else, but it's damaged from the nail and the rust, and it's deteriorated and it must be replaced according to the building codes. And so that's one of the things that if you have what's called OL coverage, you know, in your bond, I'm not allowed to talk to you about policy and coverage, but we do need to have that established, and you need to find that out because that's going to be kind of your homework assignment. And you see why that comes into play, because Mr. and Mrs. Jones, we have to, by law, replace that flashing, right? And so we need to know, is your insurance going to pay for it, or are you going to pay for it? And so, you know, if you don't know to properly set the groundwork for that and educate your client on all of those things, then are you not underserving them? Correct? I mean, so, and that's I'm a big believer in over-delivering in the value. Client hires me to get some estimates written, and I'm spending all day on the phone with them, you know, like 7-8 times a month. You know what I mean? That to me is over delivering in the value. This training course, you're going to get way more value than you ever bargained for. I guarantee it. And so moving on to the next thing is I would say that you should always stay in your lane in the contractor lane. If you're a contractor, stay in the contractor lane. And so you're like, oh man, this seems like it's so limited so far, like all the stuff that I just talked about. But it's not. I mean, let me just tell you about some of the things that you can't do, okay? And some of the things not to say. I mean, technically, this is a big one. Technically, and this might keep you out of jail, technically, you cannot advise people in most states to file a claim. Yeah, I said that. You heard it right. You cannot advise people, a policyholder, to file an insurance claim. So, whoa, isn't that what everybody's doing? Like thousands and hundreds of thousands of contractors like going out and knocking on people's door and telling them they have damage on the roof. Let me take a look to see if you have damage on the roof. Yeah, guess what? You have damage on the roof. Look at all these photos. There's a bunch of damage on your roof. You know, and what you need to do now is, who's your insurance company? State Farm? Well, you need to file a claim, right? Like, everything was perfect until that last moment where you said, and you need to file a claim. Like, you're not allowed to advise the policyholder to file a claim. In some states, that's a criminal offense. And so, just as a default position, as a safety measure, not to have to find out which states those are or anything, just don't do it. So, I mean, another way you might be able to do it is everything I said up to that point was correct. Like, going up, want me to check it out? See if you have damage? Look at all this damage I found. And who's your insurance company? State Farm? Okay, great. Well, what I've noticed, you know, in the area and a lot of our other clients, they filed insurance claims and the insurance company sent out an insurance adjuster. And, you know, it's just the wording is a little bit different to keep yourself out of trouble in that area. But so I hope that if you didn't know that, that one area right there you get from this training will keep you out of trouble, right? So you don't ever advise people to file a claim. Okay. Now, I remember this one time where I just want to give you a real life example of that, where there was already a claim that was going, and it was a flat roof, residential, high-end, upscale roof. And it was a flat roof, and it had a parapet wall that was leaking. It was put on improperly by whoever put it there, and it was causing water to get into the building and water damage and all that. So the property owner and a contractor client of mine, you know, the property owner filed a claim. The contractor client of mine went out, met with the adjuster and all that, and they said, look, this is not really covered. But as a courtesy, we're going to cover some things. We're going to allow you to rebuild the parapet wall, and we're going to give you some tarp money while that's going down, and we're going to pay for the interior repairs. But it's not really covered because it's neglect, but we're going to go ahead as a courtesy to do that. And so the problem with that, though, is that what that adjuster must not have realized is that because of building codes and other factors, like, you couldn't just take off that parapet wall because you're going to damage the roofing membrane, and so now the roof has to be replaced. And that was a big deal. Like, it must be replaced. And so we basically notified that adjuster that all of those things are in place and you can't move forward without replacing the roof completely. And she was trapped, and she's like, yeah, but it shouldn't even be covered to begin with. But we're like, but didn't you cover it? I mean, that's not our thing. We don't do coverage and policy. But Ms. Adjuster, I will tell you, the roof, what we've noticed also, is covered with hail. So, you know, it was sort of a way for her to get out of that situation. She's thinking, I should have never applied coverage in the first place and paid out what I did, because now I'm trapped into having to replace the roof, and maybe I have to be accountable to that. And she's playing that whole tape. But guess what? It's covered with hail. But that would require a whole nother claim to be filed. And I remember she said to me, okay, well, great. Just get the property owner to file a hail claim then. I said, whoa. Get the property owner to file a hail claim? Did you just said, like, do you know, like, we're not allowed to do that? Like, the contractor's never allowed to get the property. And she's like, oh, don't worry about it. I'll take it from here. And so she went and got with the agent, everybody got together, and they actually rolled it all into one claim, and it worked out. So don't advise people to file a claim. I mean, even where it's almost comical, where they're asking you to do it, you know, they don't really care, you know? And don't be calling in. I know some of you guys do this. Do not call in the claim for the policyholder. Like, I can't believe some of you are doing that, quite frankly. And I don't know who taught you to do that. But never, ever, ever call the claim in for the policyholder. They do that on their own. What I would say is, ma'am, sir, like, you'll have to file the claim, the initial step, and I could be here with you, no problem, I'll help you. But I can't do it for you. After that, I can do almost everything, you know. So don't call the claimant for him. Don't do that, please. Don't do that. All right. And now, here's some things that you don't want to say. You can't say the policy includes this or that, right? You can't say, well, they have to pay overhead and profit because that's included in the policy. You don't want to go out and talk to the adjuster. Oh, you have to pay overhead and profit. I know you do because it's included in the policy. You cannot say that, right? So, there's other things that people are running around saying is they're like, well, I know you have to pay overhead and profit, or I know you have to pay this because there's a ruling in this one case, and I got I cited the case law right here. And I think that all that stuff is so extremely valuable. So I'm not beating it up. I don't want to minimize all of the research that people do on that stuff. I mean, some people are amazing at the level of research and the knowledge that they have, and it's good knowledge, right? So I'm not beating that up. I'm just saying that it's not stuff that you, the contractor, needs to hang your hat on. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you need to just totally disregard it. And I think it's good to get yourself up to date and keep yourself knowledgeable on these things that are happening. But you can't ever use it, okay? You can't use the case law and all that stuff with the adjuster. Okay, I'm just saying, I'm never gonna do it. If you're gonna do it, that's on you, but I'm advising you not to do it, okay? So I know people are doing, you know, different methods, and God bless them, but I'm not gonna do that, all right? And I just advise you not to do the same thing. And then another thing not to say is, we fight for you, right? We're gonna fight for you. We're gonna fight through the claim. We fight the adjusters, and we fight. No, you don't. You're not a fighter, you're a contractor. You're not a fighter. That's not what you're here to do. You're not paid to fight. You're not hired to fight. You're not trained to fight, okay? Like, you're not a fighter. You're a contractor. I would submit to you that you try to go the opposite and try to make yourself a diplomat and see if that actually gets you further. I submit to you, it will get you further. I make that suggestion highly. It's gonna get you further, okay? So do not say any of those things. You know, do not say, we fight for you. Do not say, well, when the claim is settled, then we'll build a job, right? Claim settled. No, we don't settle claims. You're not settling claims. That's not what you do. You're not a public adjuster. You're not an attorney. I mean, some of you maybe watch, like, in Illinois, you can actually be a contractor and a public adjuster. I know there's exceptions in certain places. I'm talking to, the masses here. Generally speaking, you are not settling claims, right? You're not negotiating claims. That's another big one. Well, when we get through with the negotiating process, we'll build. No, we don't negotiate, okay? I've had adjusters tell me, well, we'll just negotiate between the two of us, and then, whoa, sir, I'm sorry. Well, you must not be aware. Like, I'm not allowed to negotiate with you. I'm just a contractor, right? So we never want to say we fight for you. We never want to say when the claim is settled, we settle the claim. We never want to say we negotiate. We don't negotiate anything. We're not negotiators. We're not fighters, okay? And I would even suggest to you highly that we're diplomats, because we can get a lot further by being diplomats and by being strategic and by keeping our mouths shut half the time, right, when we're in these scenarios. So we don't negotiate. We're not big shots on that level, okay? We don't adjust the claim. No, you don't say, well, when we get through adjusting the claim, we'll do it. No, we don't adjust anything, okay? Like, you don't adjust anything. Go adjust your neck at the chiropractor, but you're not an adjuster. So don't act as an adjuster. You don't adjust. That's not what you do. Adjusting is going beyond the estimating, right? It's interpreting that policyholder's policy and applying coverage based on what the policy says to the estimate and the amounts of payments that they're gonna make. And so, I mean, it goes beyond just the estimate and the damages that are documented. So you're not taking part in any of those steps, so therefore, you're not adjusting anything. And so to follow up a couple, along these lines, I wanna also give you a few words not to use, all right? So I just said policy and coverage, we'll stay away from anything policy and coverage related. And things that are in the policy are generally like words like mold, okay? Like, you might make the mistake of talking about mold when you're out documenting damage, when you're out identifying damage. And so never use the word mold in any scenario unless it's to say to prevent mold growth, okay? That's okay. But never say that we've discovered tons and tons of mold. Because if you really look into the subject of mold, you know, everyone's property, the whole household, has certain levels of mold throughout the house. Like, everyone's property does, some more than others, okay? Now, and then there's different types of mold, and some that are much more hazardous to your health and toxic than others. And so, but here's the thing. When we're dealing with water damage, okay, like it's going to turn into mildew mold if left untreated, if left unattended. Okay, that's generally what it's going to do. So now, if we've discovered mold, guess what caused that? Water, right? So it's not mold ever. It's water damage. Let me explain to you why. It's back to a policy and coverage thing that you want to stay away from anyway, okay? And that is, most folks' policies and commercial policies have, and they're real strict about this, is they have caps and limitations on mold claims and on mold coverage. So a lot of times, I used to have a contractor client of mine that did just mold, that's all they did was mold remediation. And the jobs, they'd come in, okay, we can put everything on this one. And other jobs, they'd say, well, there's a $5,000 cap on this one, so don't load it up. You know, so like, there's usually a cap of like $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $25,000, whatever that policy says that it is. And so that just means you can only do so much work, to the point to where you run into a limit, and then the insurance company's not gonna pay anymore. No matter what, they're not going to. If the policy says that they're not going to, it's excluded or whatever else, they're not going to do it. Okay, so if it's capped, it's capped. And so, guess what though? Water damage is generally never, ever, ever capped. Okay, so that just means that you usually and generally have coverage up to the policy limits. Okay, so it doesn't matter how much mold damage is there, and mold that you're seeing, or what the level of that mold is, or what kind of mold remediation is necessary to deal with that problem, it's not mold at all. It's not mold. Get that out of your head. It's water damage. That's what it is. The water caused the mold. And so I've been in scenarios where I remember one time where we were in an area where there was a hurricane and there was a storm surge, and we're standing in this house. Well, I'm standing in this house with this adjuster, and we have our PPE mask on because we couldn't breathe, because the seawater used to be all the way up to the ceiling in this particular house. It wasn't anymore, but the remnants of that was, it almost looked like there was shrubbery up against the walls. Like it was like mold growth so extensive that it was like bushes, you know? And I remember looking over at that adjuster and saying, wow, would you look at the extent of that water damage right there? And the adjuster, I think, got the hint. Because a lot of those guys and gals are paid on the scale, you know, and they want it to be approved too. They don't want it to be a mold claim, and said, yeah, that's pretty significant water damage. So, I mean, I think it's just, it's the way you word certain things. You can come to a fork in the road, like at a crossroads. You say the wrong thing, and you yourself will get yourself into a bad, bad business deal that you don't want to be in, a bad construction job. But thinking beyond that and get yourself out of the picture for a second, think of the disservice you would do to your client by directing them off into a mold claim where they're capped out at $5,000 and they have like $123,000 worth of damage. So you just got to be real careful with that stuff. It's never mold. And I think as part of the process of educating your client, you could also tell them the same thing. That way they don't make the mistake of letting that M word come out of their mouth. Another M word to generally stay away from is match. That wouldn't match. There are matching laws in certain states and certain you know, where that comes into play. But hey, that's a policy issue and a coverage issue. And so again, I'll leave that up to the public adjusters and the attorneys and the appraisers, but I'm still gonna win in my area, in my neighborhood, if you will, because I'm not gonna talk about matching. I'm gonna use other factors that will get me there without bringing up the word of matching, okay? So, and the other word that I wanna cover finally here is the word rot, okay? So has this ever happened to you? Like if you've ever done a job where you're doing the roof and you pulled off the shingles and you've gone down to the deck, because, oh, by the way, building code does require that you go down to the deck. That includes felt. Felt's got to come off too. Stop doing that. Stop going over the felt. You guys, you know who you are. I see it all the time when I'm driving around, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe these people not going down to the deck, right? So I'm sure that's happened to you before, where you've gone all the way down the deck properly. It's another reason why you want to go all the way down the deck, so you can properly inspect the deck, okay? So, and then you run into rotted decking. All right, and then you replaced it, you sent pictures, and you sent the bill to the insurance company, and you told them about the rotted deck and said, we don't pay for rot. The policy excludes rot. It specifically excludes rot, okay? So that is the first and last time you ever hear me, more than likely, unless we're talking about the same subject, using the word rot, all right? So I asked you, you found it, and you found rotten, you know, decking. Well, that's the last time I'm going to refer to it as rotten. I did that to make a point. So it's not rot. The policy excludes rot. Now, for all intents and purposes, it's rot, all right? But so the policy excludes paying for rot, all right? However, building codes require that there be a solid sheathing. Okay, a solid nailable sheathing. So if it's rot, then we don't have a solid nailable sheathing. If it's termite infested, we don't have a solid nailable sheathing. If it gives out, you know, we don't have a solid nailable sheathing. If it's weak and if it's warped and if it's sagging, okay, the decking, we don't have a solid nailable sheathing. If it's not, you know, if it's come apart from different areas, we don't have a solid nailable sheathing. If it's extensive water damage and corroded and barely hanging on by a thread, we do not have a solid nailable sheathing. We don't have a solid sheathing, okay? And that's building code. So we're gonna get into the building code in the very next segment, but that just, you don't need to say rot. So if they say, we don't pay for rot, I said, oh, Mr. Adjuster, I never said anything about rot. I don't know about that. That's not my thing. Sounds like you're talking about a policy coverage issue, and I'm not allowed to discuss policy coverage with you. But what I am allowed to discuss with you is building codes, and the building codes require that you have a solid sheathing as the decking, as the underlayment, okay? So never talk about rot. All right, now I want to move on and go into some more positive information, which is, you know, oh my goodness, Chad, you're killing me here, and all these things I can't talk about, I can't do, like, you're scaring me, okay? So let me now talk about the things that you can do, because I'm gonna bust some common myths right in their mouths right here, okay? Like, there are some common myths out there, and I'm afraid that some of these very common myths are coming from some of my true friends, you know, from some of the public adjusters I know and attorneys and then from, you know, like even insurance adjusters out there from the other side. And so some of these myths is, you know, you're not allowed to even go out there and identify damage. Now, that's false, right in its face, okay? That is false. Like, you're not allowed to identify damage? Are you crazy? Like, you're a contractor, okay? Let's think Bob Vila and stop thinking about insurance claims for a second, okay? Like, somebody calls you up and you're a handyman and they want you to come out and identify the problem, figure out what's wrong with it so that it can be fixed, all right? So, like, you can't figure out how to fix something unless you know what's wrong with it, okay? So you're allowed to document and identify damage. In fact, let me go one further. You better know how to document and identify damage. The better you know how to identify damage, the better a contractor that you are and that you will become. Okay, so you definitely can identify damage. And if you ever run into an adjuster that says that, just tell them, say, call 911. If you're saying I'm not allowed to identify damage, call your supervisor, call the Department of Insurance or whatever it is that you feel you need to do. Sue me, because I'm a contractor and that's what I do, I identify damage. If you don't believe me, call the agent. You know, if your property owner has been told improperly by the adjuster that, set them straight and tell them, say, don't take my word for it, but contact your agent to double check, right? Or you go ahead and, if we're in Texas, you know, go ahead and contact the Texas Department of Insurance. And so you don't take my word for it. See what they have to say on the matter, okay? So, and then send that response back to the adjuster and see what they have to say then. And by the way, since we're on it, it looks like your adjuster doesn't know what they're doing. You might contact the supervisor and ask for them to send you an actual competent adjuster that understands the laws and how to interpret and apply coverage, okay? So that would just be my two cents on that one. And then the other thing is that they say is that you're not even allowed to talk to and meet with adjusters. That's another common myth that is just ridiculous, all right? Like, a lot of adjusters depend on and rely on you going there, talking with them, and meeting with them and discussing things with them, all right? So, like, again, a lot of adjusters will say, oh, you can't do that. PAs will say, oh, you have to call me. You know, you have to get your property owner to call me. You need me. You shouldn't be handling that at all by yourself, because you're not even allowed to meet with the adjuster and talk with them at all. You're not allowed to talk to adjusters. That's against the law. Well, Mr. Public Adjuster, I love you. You're my friend, and I love you. I really do love you, truly, but you need to check up on your stuff, because right now you're coming over into my lane, and I'm not going to go into your lane, all right? I'm not going to go into your lane. I won't bother you up in your lane, but don't come up in my lane, all right? I can handle this all by my little lonesome, all right? So, you're allowed to talk with and meet with adjusters, and guess what else you're allowed to do? You are, in fact, allowed to discuss the scope of work. That is, the items that are necessary to make the repairs. You are allowed to talk about what should and should not be included in the estimate. And you can have some debate on that. You can have a little conflict. You can have a little resistance. You guys can have a little friendly arguments about certain issues all along what scope of work is required to get it done. So, like, the adjuster says, all you got to do on this one, on his, according to his estimate, his or her estimate, is, well, remove the shingles and replace the shingles. Oh, no, if, you know, I see, you know, my role is to perform all repairs that have been prescribed by you. So you write the prescription, Mr. and Ms. Adjuster, and I carry them out, right? So you write the prescription, and I fulfill the prescription. So I go in and perform the repairs that have been prescribed by the claim. So, and your estimate. So that's why I'm here meeting with you, Mr. Adjuster, by the way, is that I need to find out what it is that I've been prescribed to do, what repair. So if they ever say, like, do you have an estimate? Well, actually, first, I need to know, what is it that you guys are even approving? You know, like, what is going to be the prescription so that I know then what repairs have to be made? So, like, if your estimate says, if the prescription then says, remove and replace shingles, well, in order to remove and replace the shingles, according to building codes and many other factors, I'm gonna have to also carry out and do all of these other items. That's called scope of work. And we can have an argument about that. Maybe the adjuster, more than likely the adjuster, did not know anything about building codes. So you might have to educate the adjuster and bring some things to their attention. You might have to bring up the codes and show it to them and explain to him that in order to do this roof, that chimney flashing is going to have to be replaced. Why? Because there's nails and rust, and building code requires, you know, I don't see any hail damage, Chad. Well, I didn't say anything about there being hail damage, but the building code says that if there's rust damage or deterioration on the flashing, it must be replaced and cannot be reused. Okay, so, and maybe they didn't know that. Maybe you can help the adjuster and be helpful instead of being a jerk, right? So don't be a fighter. Don't be a negotiator, don't be an adjuster, right? You're a contractor, try to be a diplomat. So you're allowed to discuss the scope of work, and guess what else? I kind of already led into this a little bit or hinted at this, is you're allowed to discuss the building codes and the code laws. You're allowed to discuss the flashing. You're allowed to educate the adjuster on that. Say like, well, Mr. Adjuster, I'm afraid that, you know, in order to carry out your prescription, I can't because that would be violating the law. And there's nothing that can force me to go out here and break the law. Like, you can do a lot of things, Mr. Adjuster, but you can't force me to break the law, okay? So you can discuss that. And guess what else? Like, you're never gonna believe this. You're gonna be shocked. Guess what else you're allowed to discuss with the adjusters? You're just gonna be mind blown by this. But guess what else? Another myth blown to pieces. You can discuss price with the insurance company. You are most certainly allowed to discuss the price with the insurance company. And again, you start getting into some of these large losses, you're not gonna be able to get through it without discussing the price with the insurance company. It's just simply not even feasible. So anybody that tells you you're not allowed to discuss price with the insurance company is incorrect. And I'm not saying that they're bad people, or that you shouldn't be their friends, or you shouldn't hang out with them, or you shouldn't take other advice from them. But that one piece of advice is absolutely misled, and it's not serving you correctly. And so, if you don't want to take my word for it, go ask the agent. Go ask the Department of Insurance. Seek legal advice, okay? Like I said before, I'm not an attorney, I'm not a policy and coverage expert, but I have managed to do pretty well navigating along those lines. I've not gotten myself hung up into areas like these. I've gotten hung up in many other areas, but not these. So, knock on wood, right? So the other thing that you're allowed to do is you're allowed to send your estimates and emails and even faxes for those dinosaurs out there. Don't send faxes to the insurance companies, though. Don't do that. There's no need to do faxes anymore. You should be able to do an email 100% of the time. That way you can get your PDFs in with the photos in there. You can't send photos and fax. Don't do that. Don't stop doing that. Stop sending faxes to the insurance companies. But I'm just making a point that you're actually allowed to do that. You're allowed to send emails. You're allowed to discuss things back and forth. And you're allowed to make a friend with the adjuster, okay? So I'm hoping that those items will cover a lot of ground along the lines of understanding your role as the contractor. Now you know what not to do, you know what you can do. Hopefully that empowers you. Go get it done.